She was a young Filipino woman from a small town in Bukidnon, and he was a middle-aged professor in North Carolina, USA. They started out as pen pals in the late 1980s, and more than a decade later, they were living the American dream with their three kids in a million-dollar home in New Jersey. Unfortunately, their marriage was not exactly as it seemed. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify with new episodes out every week. This is the story of Michelle Nice, who in 2004 was found dead in a car crash, though investigators would later discover that it was staged by her husband Jonathan to cover up a murder. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic nature of this story. Born on November 18, 1969, Michelle Rivera came from impoverished beginnings in the northern Mindanao province of Bukidnon. It was a struggle for her parents to make ends meet for her and her six siblings, and this took a toll on Michelle, whose natural intelligence suffered from the lack of opportunities in their barangay. Upon turning 19, Michelle set her sights on moving abroad, specifically to the US. It was the late 1980s, and thousands of Filipinos at the time had begun relocating to countries like Canada, Australia, and America in hopes of creating a better life for their families in the Philippines. The majority of these migrant workers, however, were professionals in the medical, construction, and engineering fields, and knowing that her lack of formal education wouldn't be so attractive to American employers, Michelle instead opted to advertise herself in a local newspaper, and she caught the attention of an American professor named Dr. Jonathan Nice. Jonathan Nice was born on May 26, 1950, and though his upbringing might not have been as full of struggles as Michelle's, he too came from humble beginnings, having grown up in a working-class neighborhood in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. He did well academically, particularly in science and math, and his interest in science led him to co-found an explorer troop focused on criminology. Jonathan was often approached by his classmates for after-school tutoring. He was also a member of the student government and school paper. But despite these extracurricular activities, he was shy and socially awkward, preferring to surround himself with a small group of friends and never seeming to have any luck with girls. Jonathan apparently didn't outgrow these traits, even after graduating from Philadelphia's Temple University in 1976. He received his master's degree in 1978 and his PhD from Temple University's Fels Research Institute in 1983. He moved to Los Angeles, California for a few postdoctoral stints before landing a job as a professor in 1988 in the Department of Molecular Pharmacology and Therapeutics of East Carolina University. At the age of 38, Jonathan retained his shy and awkward nature that got him teased in high school. He did manage to marry once, but as he was a devout Christian and she was an Orthodox Jew, the marriage was dissolved after 7 years due to religious differences. Shortly after Jonathan moved to North Carolina, one of his friends showed him a newspaper that had Michelle's classified ad about looking for a pen pal. Jonathan wrote to Michelle, who happily responded to his letter, and it didn't take long before their mail exchanges became long-distance phone calls. They sent each other photographs, although Jonathan, who was then nearing 40, only sent pictures of himself as a younger man. In 1990, after having exchanged letters for about a year, Jonathan took a leave of absence from work and flew to the Philippines to meet Michelle. She was initially disappointed with his physical appearance and wanted to end their relationship, but she eventually came to like his personality and decided to stay with him. Jonathan, on the other hand, was enamored of Michelle, and a week after his arrival in the Philippines, he married her in a simple ceremony that took place in her hometown. Jonathan flew back to the US and Michelle followed 6 months later after her visa had been processed. They moved into an $800,000 home in North Carolina, and soon afterward, Michelle, who was still in her early 20s, gave birth to two sons, Alex and then Trevor. While she stayed at home to take care of their children, Jonathan began to focus more on his work. In 1995, he founded a company called Epigenesis Pharmaceuticals Incorporated after stumbling upon a molecule he believed could change the way asthma was treated, having suffered from the condition his whole life. His discovery earned him praise from the medical world, and it landed him partnerships with big pharmaceutical companies which allowed him to raise about $65 million to advance his asthma medications into clinical trials. In 2000, Jonathan and Michelle decided to relocate to the wealthy suburban area of Hopewell Township, New Jersey. There, on Keithwood Court, they purchased a 5,000-square-foot, million-dollar home where they welcomed their third child, a daughter named Samantha. Jonathan made sure Michelle and their children got the best of everything, and he extended his generosity to Michelle's family back in the Philippines. He bought them their own houses and paid for the education of Michelle's nephews and nieces. He also sponsored Michelle's father, Teodoro Rivera, so he could stay in New Jersey to help with the kids. To most people on the outside, Jonathan and Michelle were living the American dream, married for more than a decade and living in a massive property with their three beautiful children. Unfortunately for Michelle, it was all coming to an end. Michelle was an attractive and outgoing 34-year-old woman, while her husband was 53, hated socializing, and didn't care much about his looks. Michelle soon found herself less and less attracted to him, and her growing disinterest in their marriage was exacerbated in 2001 when they hired a local landscaping company to plant $50,000 worth of trees on their property. One of the crew members who worked on this project was a Guatemalan immigrant in his 30s. His co-workers knew him as Sergio Martinez, while authorities had him on their files as Miguel de Jesus. But for clarity, he'll be referred to for the rest of this episode as Alexander Castañeda, or the name by which Michelle knew him. As the property owner, Michelle had to speak with Castañeda from time to time, and while their initial conversations were strictly professional, Michelle found herself falling for his youthful good looks, and the attraction was apparently mutual. The two began texting each other constantly, and even went out on lunch dates, frequently ending up at Mount's Motel in Lawrenceville. Michelle's affair with Castañeda highlighted the mismatch between her and Jonathan, as aside from the age gap and her lack of physical attraction to her husband, she also hated his bouts of jealousy, as well as his possessive and controlling nature. Jonathan forbade her from exercising outside, even going as far as to build her a large indoor gym at home. He would also endlessly question Michelle if any man had approached her whenever she went out without him, and he stopped her from signing with a local modeling agency after she landed a contract with them. Michelle, however, was able to hide her affair from Jonathan, as he had become busy at the time trying to save his company from drowning. Epigenesis took a huge hit after the 9/11 attacks in 2001, and by the spring of 2002, the company had let go of more than half of its employees. A new group of investors began negotiations to take over Epigenesis, and they made it clear to Jonathan that while they were thankful for his work, he would not be retained as CEO. Jonathan was forced to leave the company in March 2003, and though investors were kind enough to give him a monthly stipend for his mortgage payments, they announced the shelving of his asthma drug after clinical trials returned disappointing results. But despite the loss of their main source of income, the Nices continued living as they did before. Jonathan took Michelle on a week-long vacation to the Outer Banks of North Carolina in the summer of 2003. They refused to sell their home, even though they were paying annually about $26,000, or around $38,000 in today's money, and a monthly mortgage that ranged between $6,000 and $7,000. Jonathan also bought himself a brand new Hummer, which came with a price tag of about $50,000. Unable to find a new job, he became a stay-at-home dad, frequently taking his kids on museum trips and self-publishing a book of poems he had written for children. His unemployment eventually took a serious toll on his marriage, and he and Michelle began getting into explosive fights, which were worsened by Jonathan's drinking. He became more aggressive, at one point punching a hole in the wall during one of their more vicious screaming matches. He also hounded Michelle with phone calls, even during her working hours at the local Macy's department store. As her marriage and home life deteriorated, Michelle ramped up her relationship with Castañeda. When his live-in girlfriend, Patricia Abad, found one of Michelle's thongs in his coat pocket and saw romantic messages from her on his cell phone, Abad kicked out Castañeda, allowing him to more easily pursue his affair with Michelle. But soon afterward, Castañeda's constant demands for money caused Michelle to also end things with him. Jonathan only discovered Michelle's infidelity when on July 10, 2003, he received a phone call from a stranger who played him a sex tape, and Jonathan recognized the distinct voice of the woman as Michelle's. The mystery caller hung up and called again, this time demanding $500,000, or else he would release audio and video recordings of Michelle's affair to Jonathan's family, friends, and business associates. After confronting his wife about it, Jonathan reported this to the FBI, claiming the mystery caller was Castañeda. Michelle admitted to the affair but said she had already ended it, and she told authorities that Castañeda had started stalking her, which led to Jonathan calling him to tell him to stay away from his wife and filing a restraining order against him. Local police to whom the case was referred could not trace the calls to Castañeda, so the investigating officer, Detective Daniel McCowan, concluded that the extortion claim was unfounded. Jonathan signed a harassment complaint against Castañeda, which would be conditionally dismissed if Castañeda refrained from contacting him or Michelle for 2 years. Michelle and Jonathan decided to stay together for the children, all three of whom they had sent to live with Jonathan's family in Pennsylvania while they worked on their marriage. With that, the attempted extortion case was officially closed, but that won't be the last time Detective McCowan would have to deal with an ISIS. Despite the harassment complaint against Castañeda, he and Michelle apparently resumed their relationship a few weeks after that incident. On January 15, 2004, a Thursday, Michelle met with him at 9:15 p.m. after finishing her shift at Macy's. They drove in separate cars to Hamilton Plaza, a shopping mall in Hopewell Township, where they left Michelle's Toyota Land Cruiser. Castañeda then drove her to Mount's Motel in Lawrenceville, where they had sex and took a shower, then returned to Hamilton Plaza for Michelle's car. After Michelle left in her car at around midnight, Castañeda drove to a bar for a few drinks, so his live-in girlfriend would believe that he had actually been out drinking. At 6:58 a.m., a police officer was dispatched to the Nice home after their basement burglar alarm was triggered. There was snow on the driveway from the day before, but though the officer noticed tire tracks on the lawn, he saw no signs of attempted entry to the basement's French doors. At around the same time, two Public Service Electric and Gas Company employees named Richard Archer and Chuck Black discovered a Toyota Land Cruiser resting against an embankment on Jacobs Creek Road, which was 1.44 kilometers or almost a mile away from the Nice residence. The engine was still running, and though there was minimal damage to the vehicle, there was frozen blood on the running board and shoe prints leading away from the car and across the ice on the creek. Inside the car was a dead woman, slumped over on a pillow with her eyes open. A search with the Division of Motor Vehicles revealed that the Land Cruiser was registered at the Nice family's address. Two police officers went to the residence at 9:13 a.m. and were told by two of the Nice children that none of their parents were there, but that their dad would be home soon from taking their brother to school. When Jonathan arrived later, looking disheveled, he let the officers inside the house, where they told him that the Land Cruiser had been in an accident. Jonathan told them that his wife Michelle used that vehicle, and he asked them how she was and what hospital she was in. The officers didn't respond, but instead asked when he last saw her. Jonathan said she was working from 6 to 10 p.m., then meeting a friend after, and though she had told him she would be home by 1 a.m., he knew she wouldn't be back until later, as she sometimes didn't come home until morning. Michelle's body, by this time, had been identified by Detective McCowan, and when Jonathan was told about this, he didn't appear upset that his wife was already dead. He was not yet a prime suspect, but police took his statement, and when he was asked whether Michelle was seeing anyone, he said yes and again claimed that her boyfriend Castañeda had tried to extort money from him. Jonathan added that Michelle had told him that Castañeda had made threats against him, and that Castañeda once called him screaming he was, quote, going to kill the bitch, end quote. Jonathan also said that Castañeda's live-in girlfriend had sent Michelle nasty text messages, and that Michelle told Jonathan she needed a new car because she was being followed from work by Castañeda or one of Castañeda's friends. McCowan later drove Jonathan so he could pick his son up at school, and on the way, Jonathan admitted that he had fought with Michelle about her moving out of the house. McCowan asked him when they had that argument, to which Jonathan replied, quote, last night, end quote, which didn't line up with one of his earlier statements that he last saw Michelle at 4 p.m. when they had a heated argument about divorce before her 6 p.m. shift at Macy's. Investigators put together that Michelle's death was not consistent with a car accident, and she had most likely been murdered at home, then taken to the crash site for the cover-up. Michelle wasn't wearing any shoes, which was odd for someone driving, especially given that the temperature at the time had plummeted to below freezing. She was wearing dirty stockings, and though there was a pair of women's brown shoes on the passenger side of the vehicle, they didn't match Michelle's dark blue outfit. The alignment of the driver's seat was also inconsistent with Michelle's lower body area. At just 5 feet and 2 inches or 1.57 meters, her legs would have been unable to maneuver the vehicle with her body's placement and the seat's distance from the pedals at the time of the accident. Now the prime suspect, Jonathan, was asked by a team of state municipal officers to vacate his house pending a search warrant. After leaving a message for his lawyer, Jonathan complied and took his 3 children from the home of a friend to his parents' house in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. The police dug deeper into Jonathan and Michelle's marriage and discovered that the couple had recently put their house up for sale for $1.6 million, and Michelle's job selling Chanel products at Macy's was a result of their financial troubles. According to Jonathan, though, Michelle wasn't working for money but rather to gain experience so she could someday start her own perfume company. Investigators found other things about the couple's home life that added to their suspicion. They discovered that Jonathan had lied about his age to Michelle. In their marriage certificate, Jonathan deducted about 10 years from his actual age, and Michelle only knew about the truth shortly before her death. This, along with their financial woes and his jealousy, alcoholism, and controlling nature, had all pushed her past her breaking point and led her to initiate divorce proceedings. Jonathan, however, didn't want to divorce her. On January 17, Michelle's autopsy revealed multiple internal and external injuries that included defensive wounds like cuts and bruises on her hands. She had 3 deep, gaping lacerations on her forehead, 1 laceration at the top of the head, an extensive skull fracture, and massive intracranial bleeding caused by excessive force, all of which were more consistent with blunt force trauma rather than a car accident. The froth that had developed in her lungs indicated that she had lived for 10 minutes after the trauma inflicted on her. Aside from Michelle's injuries that confirmed she didn't die from a car crash, the evidence found at the Nice residence after police got a search warrant pointed to Jonathan killing Michelle. There was a baseball bat that later revealed bloodstains, blood spatter found in the garage that someone had attempted to clean up, bloody towels hidden inside the chimney, and Jonathan's clothes soaking in reddish-brown water in the washing machine. There were also pieces of cut-up shoe soles hidden throughout the house, which when reassembled matched the set of shoe prints outside Michelle's car. The prints didn't match the shoe size of Alexander Castañeda, who had also been brought in for questioning, but they matched a pair of men's size 12 shoes that belonged to Jonathan. On January 18, Jonathan returned to the Hopewell Police Station where he was interviewed by Detective Sergeant William Skull, who told him there was probable cause to arrest him. Jonathan offered to make an incriminating statement in exchange for reduced jail time so he could take care of his children, but Skull refused the offer. Jonathan kept insisting that he didn't kill his wife, but later asked Skull whether Michelle had been with Castañeda on the night of her death. Skull said she had been, and 2 hours into the interview, Jonathan finally said, quote, "I didn't mean to kill her," end quote. According to Jonathan, at around 2 a.m. on January 16, he awoke to the sound of Michelle's car arriving at the house. He went to the garage to ask her where she had been, but she refused to answer, and while still inside her car, tried to attack him with a stiletto knife. Jonathan reacted in self-defense, grabbing her hand and shoving her down on the garage floor in order to get control of her. After hearing a thunk and seeing her head bleed profusely, Jonathan went inside the house to get some compresses. He knelt on Michelle's back when he returned, and as she flailed in an attempt to assault him again with a knife, Jonathan pushed her head down again to the floor. When he realized she no longer had a pulse, Jonathan panicked and put Michelle's body in the driver's seat of the Land Cruiser. Using an ice scraper to control the gas and brake pedals, he maneuvered the vehicle through the town's icy streets, making it look like Michelle was driving in case anyone saw them. Jonathan veered off the road and let the car plunge into Jacobs Creek. He then climbed up the snowy embankment and walked home, leaving a set of size 12 shoe prints on the snow. Jonathan's murder trial in July 2005 was all over the news, with the media describing him as a research scientist globally renowned for his efforts to cure asthma. Michelle, on the other hand, was painted as a mail-order bride from a third-world country who had repeatedly cheated on her husband. These descriptions were used to their full advantage by Jonathan's defense lawyer, Robin Lord, who was able to get her client released on a $1.7 million bail. Lord also said that Michelle had masterminded the extortion scheme with her partner Castañeda, with whom she was planning to run away after receiving the $500,000 from Jonathan. When the plan failed though, Michelle instead decided to murder her husband and came home the morning of January 16, fully prepared to do this. The media was so taken with Lord's performance, and the judge at one point even scolded her for being too dramatic. The prosecution poked holes in her argument, however, asking why Jonathan didn't call 911 and questioning why he covered up Michelle's death if it had really happened in self-defense. The defense argued that Jonathan had panicked and that even if Jonathan had indeed been planning to kill his wife, he wouldn't have done so by simply bashing her head into the concrete. Lord said that since Jonathan was a scientist, he would have used more sophisticated methods that would have let him get away with the crime. So Jonathan killing Michelle by slamming her head on the floor was purely accidental. Lord also presented in court the lingerie found in a suitcase recovered from the crime scene that implied that Michelle was exerting a ton of effort in her affair with Castañeda. The prosecution, on the other hand, painted a more sinister picture of Jonathan, highlighting his possessive and controlling nature, which was corroborated by Michelle's best friend, Larissa Seuss, who testified during the trial. According to prosecutor Doris Gallucci, Michelle had come home after her rendezvous with Castañeda and found her infuriated husband waiting for her. He yanked her out of the car and began beating her face into the concrete, and after killing her, went out of his way to hide the evidence of his crime by staging a car accident. In closing arguments, the defense held that Michelle's murder was a crime of passion, that she had tried to kill Jonathan so she could run away with her boyfriend, and Jonathan managed to save himself but killed her in the process. There was evidence though that Jonathan had known about Michelle seeing Castañeda again, and the prosecution emphasized this to the court, which meant that Michelle's death was no longer a crime of passion but rather a calculated murder. In September 2005, after a 5-week trial and the jury deliberating for 3 days, the 55-year-old Jonathan Nice was found guilty of second-degree passion provocation manslaughter and fourth-degree tampering with physical evidence. This ruling meant that for the jury, Jonathan did act in the heat of passion when he confronted his wife about her lover. The difference in the US between a verdict of murder and manslaughter is decades in prison, and because of this, Jonathan was sentenced to only 5 to 10 years in prison, with eligibility for parole in 5 years. He filed for an appeal in 2007, but the process was delayed when his new counsel, Paul W. Bergen, was charged with taking over a prostitution ring for which he ultimately pleaded guilty. Jonathan's appeal was denied in 2009, but even though his conviction was upheld, he still only served about 5 years in prison. He was released on December 5, 2010 after receiving credit for good behavior and for the time he spent incarcerated before his sentencing. Jonathan, now out of prison, changed his story about his involvement in Michelle's death, claiming that Alexander Castañeda was the culprit. In 2012, he self-published a book titled Under Color of Law, The Deliberate Conviction of an Innocent Man and the Destruction of a Family. And in it, he wrote that Michelle's affair wasn't intentional but was the result of Castañeda stalking and drugging her, and her head injury supposedly came from falling off the balcony of a motel room. In February 2020, Jonathan, who was already 70, was indicted on federal charges of wire fraud and the interstate shipment of misbranded animal drugs. This came after authorities found that he had been selling fake drugs called Tomexol and Naturasone, developed by several companies he had created starting in 2012. The drugs were marketed as medications for curing canine cancer, whose research was partly funded by the Food and Drug Administration. They were determined to have no FDA approval and consisted of only random bulk ingredients that Jonathan had mixed together at a Collegeville facility. There are no new updates as of this recording on the new set of criminal charges he's facing, but if convicted, Jonathan Nice, who seems to have an knack for deception, would be fined up to $1.25 million and face a maximum sentence of 32 years in prison. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. This story was suggested by Luisa Ibanez in the show's Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/storiesafterdark. This episode was co-written by Kayla De Leon and was narrated and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app, as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.